Hello everybody and welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures podcast presented by NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solution Project in collaboration with Shoshin Works, a global firm helping organizations and nations navigate ecosystemic transformations. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping society, industry, the economy, and policy, and reframing how we build for resilient futures. Today, we are examining the way that traditional boundaries and operating norms are being updated and replaced with ecosystemic models, our new economic engines for the digital era. I am Marco Annunziata. I'm the co-founder of Annunziata and Desai Advisors, and I write the Just Think blog on Substack. And today I have the pleasure of being joined by Dr. Parfait Achadeh, who's a research affiliate at MIT Media Lab and a quantum computing expert who is pioneering the intersection of quantum computing and urban development. Parfait is developing revolutionary humanized agent-based modeling tools that transform cities into living laboratories for decision-making and urban planning. So let's get started today. Parfait, you have a very interesting life story. You started off from Benin in Africa. You've been studying and working in Spain, in Barcelona, in Munich, in Germany, and eventually made your way to the MIT Media Lab in Boston. It's a fantastic life story. Your background, your expertise is in quantum computing, and now you're focusing on applications to city science and urban development. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit why, with a background on quantum computing, you have then decided or been led to focus on city science and urban development?
Absolutely. But before answering this question, let us imagine a city where every street intersection house digital agent with memory and heart of their town. Tiny virtual big games that not just following a program path, but they can acquire experience, interpret their surrounding, and having also the perception of their environment or their environment. That is the living lab that we are building. Okay. My background in optimization and quantum computing shape how I see complexity. Mm-hmm. Cities, like quantum systems, are dynamic, interconnected, and often unpredictable. So when I joined a media lab, MIT City Science, I realized that I could use quantum computing or quantum thinking, not just like a quantum tools, but to design better human systems. It wasn't about switching discipline. It was about applying a different lens, like quantum trained me to look at entangled systems uncertainly and also parallel possibilities. That mindset is incredibly relevant in urban development, where every decision influences across times and scale.
So this is very interesting. And I know that there is a danger of getting you to talk too much about the complexity of quantum computing, but you've touched on something very important, the issue of parallel processes and the issue of how the nature of quantum computing is actually a better instrument to address a system which is as complex as a city where humans interact. Why don't you go a little bit deeper into it to get our audience to understand it better?
Yes, and human planning has historically related on a static, deterministic model. But cities are dynamic systems full of uncertainty and feedback loop and competitive objective. So quantum principle that we know embrace this complexity rather than reduce it. So we know that we have superposition principle that let us simulate multiple, let us say that human future at once, not just one scenario. Because if you imagine that you can design some kind of agent, we can talk about this. Okay, imagine 1 second that you have an agent that has memory, that have a perception, and has the way to experience everything that is doing, not just navigating by the CD. If these agents, you can put it in one configuration of the CD, is navigate through that experience, and you change the configuration, you put it another configuration and another configuration, at the end of the day, if you ask this agent to vote, and which of those configuration the agent feel better or would like to leave, the agent can give you, can help you to extract the qualitative decision. Instead of making them sequential, one by one, one by one, one by one, one by one, you can use superposition, principle of computation, quantum computation, to try to solve all this at once. So quantum optimization also help us to explore huge solution space, because optimization basically is talking about searching problem. So if you want to optimize something, you need to find, to get balance, the trade-off of searching or of planning mobility and sustainability on under some strict constraints. This is optimization. So by using quantum, you can explore huge solution space. This is why I'm using quantum computing, because quantum computing doesn't just make things faster that people are thinking. Mm-hmm. It let us reframe the problem space. So it's like, think about, you have a lake and you want to go to one point to another point. With the classical boat or the classical car, what you will do, you will find a way to not go through the lake, because you can sink. So you find a way to go. Maybe you go to 100 speed, kilometer speed. Okay. But quantum, you don't need to go to that speed, but you can find a way to go through the lake and to move from one point to another point. This is the magic of quantum computing. So if you know how to put all these stages, all these scenario in parallel, in superposition, and you know how to extract the information quickly, you can improve the classical computation.
Yeah, this is very, very clear. It's actually, it's a beautiful way of explaining the comparative advantage of quantum. It brings to mind a couple of questions, Perfetto. The first is the following. Cities, as you said, are complex systems where humans interact. There is a lot that happens in a city environment. There is mobility, there is transportation, there is energy transmission and consumption, there is economic activity going on. So in your problem, how do you define in the environment? What are the parameters that you then try to optimize with your approach?
Yes, it's very good, very good, very good question. Here in city science is based on one of our PR, highlight that we have here on the sort of like our lighthouse here, is Kent Larson. And there was defining the methodology of building cities, how to analyze cities and how to extract like some kind of metrics, guys, to understand cities and urban planning. Okay. And so, how we work and what we need to do things here is we go from the let us say that the reality of the city today. So we need to understand all the amenities, where the amenities are. We need to understand how people commute and from where they are commuting. We need to understand where the bottleneck are from all this. What we try to do is, yes, let us see if we can make some kind of intervention in the city by maybe changing this place or this building from one side to another side, how this affects to mobility, mm-hmm. to workability, and also sustainability as what we want to see. So by making all this change, human can do it. But you cannot make all this combinatorial movement of the whole one big city, because every movement is factorial. So the complexity grow up very quickly.
Yeah.
So this way was, yes, perfect. The input data, we don't need to change the input data. We'll take in account the same methodology that we have, that we need census data, we need the mobility data, we need the amenities, we need all this information. But what we want to speed out is the way to reduce the complexity of solving this problem by using the classical computation. So it's the way that I'm focusing with quantum computing. But not only that way, okay? The methodologies that we have now help us to extract quantitative information. So we have the expert around, or the stakeholder around the laboratory that we built, and they make change and they see if this change impact in the workability, in the diversity of the city, or in the affordability of the houses. And by seeing this, they make a decision. What we are trying to do also is design this agent, that humanized agent, the agent and the artificial agent that has this dimension of perception, dimension of memory, and dimension of decision, that can live in that living lab, navigate through them, experience and change, and they make the decision to the stakeholders. Instead of having this decision by making this movement, those agents can live like a human being in the cities and give you their decision, and the expert can decide what or not. But to answer quick your question is, it's the same methodology that we have before. We are keeping this, and we are using the census data. We are using, in some case, we were using like telecom data to know how the mobility is, and also like safe graph data to learn a little bit more about how they commute or not. And with this movement, we can aggregate with our recipe of quantum computing and AI to see how can we move from a quantitative data to qualitative data.
And you've already mentioned something which is crucial to your approach, right? You have developed, you call it a humanized agent-based model. So you have agents, these are, I assume, artificial intelligent agents who live in the city environments that you build. They experience it, as you said, and therefore they can report and vote on what they find preferable. How do you model these agents? You also mentioned that the diversity of the city is one of the characteristics. So how much work goes into developing different varieties of agents? How are they modeled? What are their preferences? How do they form their decisions?
Perfect. Yeah, no, this is a very good question. And yes, let us try. But before that, let us understand a little bit how are the traditional agents-based model. Okay. The traditional agents-based models often use rule-based agent. That means I have a lot of rule and the agent followed these rules. So that machine that to make some kind of very clear image is like machine or agent that move from point A to point B, follows some kind of probabilities or react to some predefined triggers. This is the traditional way to do it. But they are very useful for systems simulation, but they don't feel like a human. We are not building like a clone of human. We are not doing digital twin because we don't need all the capability of human.
Yeah.
We don't want to replace human. What we need is some kind of tools that can extract the information that we need. That is important. Okay. Because human being cannot live in a city 40 years, 50 years, 60 years before say that this city, we like it or we don't like it. But we can build these agents, put them in that living laboratory and speed out. They are living there. So 1 month of simulation could be like 40 years of human being. and having this information. So we need the emotion part of the agent. Emotion is the basic part, but the nudges is what help us to make decision. So to come to the behavior, you need the emotional part. So the humanized agents-based model is like a step forward of this traditional agents-based model, where we build agents that are not just reactive, but self-aware, emotional, and adaptation. Each agent has a personality vector. So he has his personality vector that is different from a vector that another agent has. And this personality vector is according to the census data that we can have in the city that we are talking about. So having the sensory data that we create, like some kind of synthetic profile and the personality vectors, and they have their multidimensional emotional state based on the Paul Ekman model. Paul Ekman is one of the father of emotional, is like the basic state where is defined like the six dimension about the emotional, basic emotion. And if is the 70th one, but we are talking about joy, fear, sadness, anger, surprise, and disgust. So imagine that agent have the personality vector, have this emotional state vector, and has a memory that accumulate the experience over time. Okay. So this allow us to make decision, not only based on the logic, on the rule, but also on how they feel, how they experience, and how their personality bias their perception. Okay. And how this experience is basically, and like the agents through the city in the context agent engine, each urban location is tagged with his emotional balance based on the category of the park, the retail, the hospital, the transit, and the amenity that we are seeing. We use the AI model and also the fuzzy logic to estimate how a certain place affects a certain agent depending on their emotional state and personality. For example, it's like an introvert agent may be anxious in a crowd, a noisy square, while the extrovert one can feel joy and vitality. They don't just move, they react, they adapt, and remember what they was involved. And the memory system store emotional stress over time, which later influence in behavior. So when we simulate a CD installation, we get the emotional rich trajectory, not just the rational world.
That is fascinating, because often when you think of, or when we think of city planning in a very stylized and simplistic way, one thinks of very simple, almost unidimensional optimization framework. So, for example, I'm led to think, okay, there is a big city, traffic is a big problem, and there will be some work, some simulation trying to figure out how can we get the traffic to be smoother. So you literally have only one variable, you are optimizing it, which is how quickly can people go from point A to point B. What you are developing is something that gives us a result which is a lot richer, right? Because it brings out the trade-offs. It's allows us to say, well, we could do this in terms of city planning, and it would make some sets of people happier, some sets of people less so. So it starts giving us some information as to the trade-offs that we have in planning a city on how to deliver happiness, so to speak, to different segments of the population. So it's a very, very rich framework.
Thank you. Yes, it's what we are trying to do here, because city science, the vision of city science is go beyond a smart city. What we are doing, we are working to solve the urban problem, in the, let us say, bedline cities, but also we are thinking about the city of the futures. okay, how we solve this in the future. One project that I was not directly involved in this project, but is like some kind of reference to show us what is important. What we are doing here is very important, and how we are doing is more important. Is, yes, about a survey that we have done here in the Kendall Square, where is MIT. And yes, we did a survey, and we saw that the CO2 that each person spending or generating per year was 15-17 ton per year per people. And to get balance, to make without climate change, without all this headache, and to make the mobility well and all the accessibility, we have seen that we need to reduce this from this number 17.19 to 2.5 ton per people. Mm-hmm. But the biggest information here is, wow, if we try to remove all the combustion cars here, how much we will reduce this amount? We have seen that we only reduce like 1 ton.
Wow.
If we change all the cars and we put electrical car here, the maximum reduction that we are thinking about, we will have, is like 1 ton. So what we have seen from that research, this is one of the reason of that I was saying that is one of the information that I like a lot here. What we have seen is that the problem that we are trying to solve is not like an isolated problem. It's like we need to face like a mobility consensus and environment and transformation, informal or informal cities, mobilities, and all this stuff. So it's not only this, let us say that, this isolated problems. So this is the reason that the tool that we need is not talking about optimization, only optimization, because optimization is maybe the thing that a smart city can do, because they are collecting information, they can try to optimize. But what we are trying to do is not that, is how can we make city more walkable? Because this is one of the factors to get balance. How can we make cities that the job where you are working and where you are living could be very close, and make you that the negative impact to the society can be reduced? No, so it's where we are moving to.
It's a very powerful argument. You know, the topic of our podcast series is exactly ecosystemic futures. And as you've highlighted, you made a very powerful point, which is, in an ecosystem, just changing one thing is most often not going to work magic. As you said, we tend to think that just converting old cars, old vehicles to electric vehicles could have a massive impact. But you look at the system as an ecosystem and you find that, in fact, the impact is a lot smaller than what we need. And so what we need is a much more systemic intervention, which leads me to ask you the following question, Parfait, which is, what is the next step in your work? So you're performing these simulations with your agents. You're getting all the information. You have stakeholders around the table. What happens next? To what extent can this lead to interventions within existing cities? To what extent it's informing the development and the design of future cities, which, as we know, across the developing world, especially, urbanization continues at a very fast pace. So even influencing the way that big cities are going to be built around the world might have a massive impact. So what is the next step, the policy implementation of your work, so to speak?
Yes, the next step is to make it a short is, yes, I wanted to say to finish the job, but this job
you cannot finish it.
It's not finished at all. So is having the tool, because we already have the tool here. I can invite anyone that is close to Boston, MIT, close to MIT Media Lab, and come to visit what we are doing here in City Science, because we have a lot of demo space where we can see the thing that we are doing. Okay. Next level that we are trying to do here is to perform more and more the agent. Okay. And now we have the agent that can make decision by himself. And this extracts a lot of data from the model. And we are the stakeholders that we have here who can analyze this data. What we want to do is make it generally worse. That means if tomorrow we want to go some, let us say that in Benin, in Kove, one little city that where we don't have data. We don't have data because to analyze about the mobilities, the amenities, you need some kind of data, because machine learning without that data does not. We cannot do machine learning. We cannot do stick without data. Okay. So what we are trying to do is generate this synthetic data that can be generic, that by moving from one point to another point, you can have this information private, without privacy stuff. Mm-hmm. So you have data that can represent, like, let us say that a society that can represent where are you going, and you can make with this data and with this scenario, you can have a real actual situation of the cities, of the neighborhood that you are analyzing. And from that point, you can make the intervention that you want to make over this data, and you will still having the accurate solution. This is what we are trying to do. And by doing this, we will validate all this methodology, because we are embedding a lot of new technology and things are going very, very fast. The agent are gaining a lot about the reasoning. So in the speed that we are going, also the ecosystems, that the company ecosystem, that also is going very, 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 very fast. So what we need is to make this validation of our solution, and also try to move places to the places where there's no city, and we can build city from scratch, avoiding all this headache that we have today and some cities. Because one thing that I didn't mention, but is very important from our view of the cities are complex systems that live in three dimensions: social iteration dimension, economical dimension, and environmental dimension. So it's the way that we analyze city. So by gathering all this information, gathering data, and design these synthetic data and this methodology to make all this scenario, we can go somewhere and we can design a city or neighborhood that we want according to these three dimensions. Because if we want a city like New York, that we want like a nerve of economical to be so strong, we need to see how can we design all the mobilities, all these tools that we need, this asset that we need to make this city very, very strong in the economical dimension. If what we want is make the city more workable, and we need a social iteration and also less impact in the environmental, so we need to design these cities workable, like one of the concepts that we have here in the lab, that 15-minute workable cities. So we need to design all these cities by according to the synthetic data that we have, or we can generate, and very close to the real data. So, and also the methodology that we have to test the common scenario. So to make it short, I can say that validate our solution, make it generic to move to any environment, any cities. And from using this, we can only press two or three button or two or three step, and we can analyze very well the actual situation of the city. And also we can project where the city can go without dealing with telecom data that is very expensive and also a lot of privacy stuff issue here. So by generating all this synthetic data, we can be privately less data in that or information in that sense.
That's again very, very fascinating. And based on this, I want to ask you a futuristic question. And your answer, I'm assuming, can only be a broad guess. But I'm thinking of the following, listening to you, Parfait. You are mentioning how cities are complex environments along three dimensions. There is the economic dimension, the social, and the environmental. Something else, which is another important dimension, is in many cities, the historical dimension. You know, you and I have both lived and worked in very old cities back in the old continents. And even here in the US, cities like Boston or New York already have a certain history. So that creates inertia, right? There is a lot, the infrastructure is in place. That infrastructure has also cemented some of the social dimension, because the way that people behave is shaped by how the infrastructure is distributed. Based on this, if you look ahead 50 years, 100 years, what do you see in our future? Do you see a significant restructuring of existing cities? Do you see us shifting away towards completely new cities that we build completely from scratch based on simulation like yours, and therefore shifting away, you know, starting with a complete blank slate? What does the future look like?
It's very difficult, Sean. It's a futuristic question, but I like the question. Okay, I like that, because it's where we are dreaming of and we are trying to push. But one thing that I want to say here, I want to also keep to be politically correct in that sense, is if we keep design city the way that we are designing now, we will collapse. Because I just mentioned the survey that we have done here in Kendall Square, and we see that this level of the difference between the 17.19 ton per people year, to get balance, we have to reduce to 2.5 ton per people. So this is the city that we have. We need to make a lot of intervention on these cities to make it to get balance, to make it more affordable, to make it more workable, to make it more decentralized electrical grid, like a 100% electrical vehicle. But this electrical vehicle also, we need to think about the battery, but it's not here. Like, we can make 50% hybrid work. Deep energy retrofits, something like that. Workable access and home to job. Workable access to the amenities. Hyper efficient housing. It's like lightweight community scalar mobility, and so on and so on and so on. So all this stuff that I'm saying, that is like, wow, we need to change a lot. We need to go back to the past. It's like the movie that we need to from the future go to the past, and go to the past where we were in the Paris where the cities was workable, was designed, and like in 20 minutes workable, and also having the industry here, having clean electricity also. So it's not about only optimizing stuff. It's not about this, but it's also about how we shape the city. Which shape of the city, which perception of the city do we want? We need to make a city like a thing that feel also, that yes, it live and feel, but we need to count on that. So what I'm waiting from the future is that, yes, definitely the city of the future will change a lot, because we will need to face zoning problems, the diversity and density problems. We need to face them. We need to think a little bit in vertical more than horizontal. All this stuff will make a lot of change, because if you are living in horizontal and you have some kind of lift that can work very well, so the proximity, the job don't have to be too far away from where you are you living. The amenities don't have to be far away from where are you living. The street can be also on the building. I think that is a little bit sci-fi, but I think that is where we have to go, because it's the way to reduce all the CO2, all this stuff, and make it more workable and make it city that can help also to focus in the direction of the economical stock. Because without this nerve, we don't have city. We can have very good social iteration. We can have very good environmental stuff. But if this exchange that make real city, that creates what we call city, if we don't make it strong, we don't have city. That is important. New York, without this exchange, is not New York. Correct. And imagine the U.S. losing New York. Imagine, not U.S., the world using New York. Imagine a little bit. Imagine the world using like Boston, Paris, Tokyo.
It's a very powerful point, Perfet. It highlights the fact that your methodology is actually a very powerful instrument to allow us to think logically and quantitatively through the trade-offs and the choices we face in reshaping the cities of the future. Because, you know, we could go by trial and error, but that's a very expensive process. And so having analytical tools like this, which can actually allow us to simulate, to think through it. And as you pointed out, think through it by simulating with agents the actual lived experience of humans in these theoretical cities, tremendously powerful.
And also about one of my work, but I was out here and like here we are collaborating everyone and we are helping everyone. One of my colleagues that defends this work, Yasushi, is about also decentralized voting mechanism. So also we need this. We need also the way to understand how can we decentralize voting mechanism. Why voting mechanism have to be binary? I vote to you. I don't vote for you. When we think a little bit about business, as you mentioned that you are coming from an economic way, if I have my portfolio value and I want to make like some kind of portfolio optimization, I don't think that I have all my wealth, all my money, I put it in one asset. I split them. Why we don't use also this technique to split like a decision between a lot of stuff? This may be for some democratic stuff doesn't make some sense, but for things like, yes, I want to decide about moving from this point to this point and this point to this point. I can, yes, I know that Marco has experience on the mobility stuff. I can give Marco 60% of my vote and give to another person like 30% of my vote and another 20% of my vote. So by that way, what I'm doing also, I'm designing some kind of a voting mechanism, dynamic truck systems that we call it propagation proxy voting, where people delegate decision power with transparency and agency. So this is one dimension also that we are working on. And think a little bit also that, and the agent that we are using, we have here, this agent have this capability to delegate, to do all this stuff. And you have this scenario that we talk also, and you have also this co-design policy that we can use. So all this melting pot could help a lot, is the co-agency that we are working on, and they become to a co-creator of the city. This is where our leader Kent Larson is focusing, and he wants to push, because by doing this, yes, we have a tool that can help us. And sometimes I say this to my colleague and also the people that have the opportunity to hear me or to suffer me. I say to them that look at the fire. The fire in the past, our ancestors, like 10,000 years ago, they didn't know the formula of the fire. They only know two things or three things, or two things, and the consequences come: how to activate, how to deactivate a fire, how to use it. And if we are here today, it's because they knew how to use the fire to build a wheel, to build a weapon, to build all this stuff, and to eat well, and come to this dimension. And only centuries ago, we discover the formula of making fire. So sometimes we need to believe on some kind of trajectory of what we are doing and keep working and keep improving without judging a lot, and like a fire. You need only how to activate it, how to deactivate it, and how to use it. And keep moving, because life is dynamic. It's not static.
That's a really powerful image. It's a wonderful place to, unfortunately, bring our conversation to a close. We could go on for a long, long time. And I think we'll try to tempt you into recording another podcast episode with us, focusing on these decision-making and decentralized voting mechanisms, because I think it's fascinating from an economic perspective. It's also fascinating, and there is a lot there that we would love to unpack. But Dr. Parfait Achadet, thank you so much from the MIT Media Lab, enlightening us on the work you're doing, applying quantum computing to the future of cities. It's been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Marcus. And thank you for everything. Thank you.
And thanks, everyone, for joining us. Please do check out this season's new episodes as we explore the convergence of innovation, technology, and refactor business models, and how this convergence is reshaping industry and what it means for our ecosystemic futures. Follow us, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever your favorite place for podcasts is, and you can always learn more at shoshinworks.com.